It's August 24th, 2010. This is Wendy Erickson, reference librarian at the Parchment Community Library. I'm conducting an oral history interview this morning with two guys, Richard Granger and Bert Fish. Rick, if you would give me your full name and when and where you were born.
My name is Richard L. Granger, actually a junior. I was born in Plainwell, Michigan on August 3rd, 1944.
And where do you live today?
I live in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, a little town called Gladstone, which is just north of Escanaba, and both are located about 125 miles north of Green Bay, Wisconsin.
And what's your personal connection to the Parchment area?
Well, I grew up here. My folks moved here when I was about a year old and went through Parchment High School from our Parchment school systems from kindergarten through 12th grade, graduated in 1962. And attended Western Michigan University and stayed here until graduation and then moved to Wisconsin and Northern Michigan where I worked in the paper industry at that time.
Okay, let's get some biographical information on Bert. Bert, your full name, when and where you were born.
My name is Bert Fish. I was born in Kalamazoo at Borges Hospital, July 8, 1943. And I lived in Parchment for 67 years so far, Parchment area.
Okay. Went to school here.
Parchment schools, obviously. I was a member of the first graduating class in 1961. There was 59 members that graduated in 61 at the new high school up on G Avenue. My parents, my grandparents lived here, and then my parents lived here. First of all, we lived when I was first born, but I don't remember it, on Wilson Avenue. Then we moved to Collingwood in Cooper Township at my grandmother's house. And then later we moved up on G Avenue behind the service station that my dad used to run on the corner of G in Riverview where the Speedway gas station is today.
What are your parents' names?
My dad's name was Harold and my mother's name was Bertha.
And Rick, how about you, your parents? Were they from here?
My dad was born in and lived in Kalamazoo all his life, and my mother was from Otsego.
And their names?
Richard and Mildred.
Okay.
Her maiden name was Barbara.
All right. Okay, you guys, I need earliest recollections of Parchment. School, probably?
Probably. This is Bert again. I went to kindergarten, I guess is the proper pronunciation, at what was known as the community house.
And sure.
Mrs. Beulah McGee's kindergarten class. And then I started first grade in the old schoolhouse that was on Riverview Drive that was torn down. Mm-hmm. And actually my dad went to school there too. Huh. And then in fourth grade, they built the North Elementary School at the end of Keys Drive, and I attended North Elementary. Then back to what is now the middle school again for 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. And then every preceding class before mine after 9th grade would either go to Kalamazoo Central, St. Augustine, or U High because Parchment didn't have a high school.
Correct.
That stopped with the class just before mine. So in 10th grade, we stayed at the middle school for 1 year. Actually, I think it was a year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then we moved into the new high school for the second half of my junior year and senior year.
Okay, Rick, do you have similar?
Very similar.
Very similar to Bert?
Just 1 year behind Bert.
Just 1 year behind Bert.
Yep. I attended kindergarten starting at the Central Elementary School in Parchment, which the building is no longer there. It's approximately where the existing intermediate school is. I think that's what it's called, on Riverview Drive across from where Ralph Herrick lives.
Yeah.
There used that the old red brick building is long gone.
But okay.
That was the original. It ran from kindergarten through sixth grade.
So, happy memories of going to school, or you like school, or?
Yeah, school was good. School was fun.
Yeah,
we had good teachers.
Good teachers. Do you remember anybody in particular?
As far as teachers?
Yeah.
A couple, actually. My sixth grade teacher at Northwood Elementary, whose name was Mrs. Strobel. I can't think of her first name.
Madeline.
Was it Madeline?
I think.
I don't know.
I should.
But, She was my sixth grade teacher and the principal down there at that time, and she had a cabin at up by
Pretty Lake.
Paradise, Michigan in the UP.
Uh-huh. So,
what is that point there?
Whitefish Point.
Whitefish Point. And we used to vacation up in that area, and we'd stop and see her, and I just grew to love the Upper Peninsula from that time on.
I so. See, sure.
And another teacher that, there was a couple that I had constantly, but another one who was very well-liked by everybody, her name was Leah Brown, and she was the music teacher,
right.
And the band teacher,
mm-hmm.
And she used to put on a lot of different concerts. She had a Christmas concert and a spring concert, and they were well attended. I played in the band then once I got into middle school.
What instrument did you play?
I played a trombone. That was interesting, too. there was a guy by the name of Masteller that used to come out when you were in sixth grade, and if you were interested in joining the band, you got permission from your folks, and then this guy worked for one of the music companies that sold instruments, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And he came out, and of course, everyone wanted to play either the drum or the cornet or whatever. Well, you wouldn't have much of a band at that rate. So he looked at me and he said, you got long arms and big lips, you're a trombone player. So I played the trombone.
Did you like it?
It was fun, but I didn't. I wasn't real serious about it.
You didn't go on.
After the middle school band, I quit it. And
okay.
Didn't play in high school. I got involved in sports. But
okay.
I played the trombone.
How about teachers for you, Rick?
Teachers?
Do you remember anybody in particular?
Yeah, I can remember virtually all my elementary school teachers, and Mrs. Fochman was the kindergarten teacher, and I thought a lot of her.
Ruth Fochman.
Mm-hmm.
And probably my favorite teacher in elementary, probably my favorite teacher overall throughout the entire Parchman experience was Mrs. Ricks. She was my sixth grade teacher.
Okay.
And she was...
she was also a principal.
She was a principal. She was always very interested in her students and did a lot of extra things with them over and above and beyond the call of duty, I guess, for lack of a better term.
And I didn't have Mrs. Ricks because she was at the
elementary school
down here while I was at North.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mrs. Tickner, I remember, it was a stern disciplinarian.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Meyer was a stern disciplinarian, was not hesitant at all to whack you with a sorority board.
That was old lady Tickner.
Old lady Tickner.
Forgive us, Sue.
Hazel yes. Meyer. She was the one that had the sorority board.
Yeah, Mrs. Tickner. She's still alive, I believe. In fact, she may even come down here. She's 90 some years old.
Oh, really?
Last I knew, she was still.
Well, I need to talk to her.
You do. She'd be very good.
How would you spell her last name?
Tickner, you're talking about?
Yeah.
She died.
Oh, did she die?
She died recently. She died within the last year or so. She was 102, I believe.
I'm sorry I didn't get her.
Take away the old lady then. She lived a good life.
How about your neighborhood? Did you guys live in the same neighborhood?
Fairly close.
At times. When I lived on Collingwood, I think Rick lived on 20th.
20th, yeah. I always lived on 20th.
But then I moved up above the tracks.
Okay.
Which is important.
I
lived down there too. It wasn't the slums.
I lived on the wrong side of the tracks.
I can identify in Escanaba when I was growing up. We were on the wrong side of the tracks. I can identify.
I'm not going to say wrong side of
tracks. But the railroad tracks were very defining.
Parchman was a clicky town.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay.
Very clicky.
Okay.
Anyway, I moved up above the tracks.
Yes.
In the house on G Avenue, right behind the gas station, and that's when I was in high school.
You guys remember any of your neighbors distinctively?
Oh, yeah.
Wherever you lived,
there was a big family across the street there on G Avenue called the Tinklenbergs. They had about 16 kids.
Tinklenburg Manor.
The house was torn down, and a progressive gas station was built there, and now it's a car lot.
Yes, it is. Sure.
And the other corner was a house where Johnston's lived. That was torn down, and it was a Shell station, and Rick actually ended up working there.
Oh.
And then the third corner was, another car lot today. That was Guzin's General Store.
Yes, Guzin's.
Harold Guzin.
Heard of it.
And then, of course, on the remaining corner was my dad's gas station and our house was right behind
it. Was that the big intersection of Parchment then?
No.
Is that
no.
where everything
no.
happened? No, not
no.
so much.
No.
Where was it?
Parch Mountain.
Parch Mountain. Still Parch
Mountain. Drive. Yeah.
There
okay.
used to be a four-way blinking light there that said stop from every direction.
Sure.
In the living. And yeah. that was a scene of a very bad wreck
yeah.
sometime in the late 30s. There was four or five teenagers killed there.
I think it was later in the 30s.
Was it?
Because there was one Bob Derrick was a cop.
Well, I thought he was the one that they installed the police force as a result of that bad accident. They never had a local police force before.
Oh,
that.
Yeah, they had his dad. Or his
Billings was there.
No, it wasn't his dad. It was his father-in-law, Al Billings. Was the first police.
Is that the accident that started the lower speed limit?
Yeah.
Yes.
Being
That's
so rigidly enforced
yes.
and still is?
The accident that made Parchment known as
the speed trap
in yes.
southwestern Michigan.
Parchment and Jones, Michigan. No matter where you went in Michigan, you say you're from Parchment, they say, oh, that's the speed trap.
Is
and
that right? They got
two
serious
miles,
about
2 miles
it.
Over the limit, they nailed you. And technically, you could have odd-sized tires on your car, and your speedometer would be off by quite a bit, really. So,
yes, yeah. Yeah,
you know, and a lot of people would contest the interesting story there. A lot of people would contest it. I was telling Rick this the other day, and we had a justice of peace out here by the name of Howard. I told you his name.
Judge Pierce.
Judge Pierce.
Howard?
Right.
Okay.
Howard Pierce, and if somebody contested the speeding thing, Bob Herrick, Ralph's dad, would go around town. You get Bob Belisle, you get my dad, and you get a few other citizens, and go down and they'd have a trial by jury. Same jury every time.
Oh,
same,
really?
Known as the
basically
hanging
jury. Basically the same result every time.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Guilty, right? Same
yeah.
result?
Yeah, but you know, in those days it was a different situation because you didn't get points on your driver's license.
Sure,
it was
right.
more or less you were trying to defend yourself because you were upset with the getting stopped for 2 miles over, or you were upset
yes.
because it was $15 fine or whatever
yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
It wasn't as serious offense as it is now where you can lose
mm-hmm.
your license and stuff.
Right. Right.
And they had the same, I can't remember too many of them, but I know Bob Lyle, my dad,
mm-hmm.
they were always around town and, you know, they owned businesses so they could take an hour or two off and go down with the hanging judge and sit there.
How about gardens?
Gardens?
Did everybody grow vegetables here? You guys have backyard gardens?
We had vegetable
Would you go
gardens.
Raid other people's gardens when you were kids?
But
or?
That wasn't in Parchment proper. That was in Cooper Township where
yeah,
was it?
Yeah, there
yeah.
were a lot of gardens around. My dad always had vegetable and flower gardens, so there, a lot of people
okay.
had gardens.
Yeah. We had gardens.
Okay.
Actually, you know, you ask where I lived. I only lived in Parchment at one time.
Okay.
That's when the time that I really don't remember that much, and that's when my folks lived on Wilson in this little house. But
mm-hmm.
when we lived on Collingwood, that was Cooper.
Sure.
When I lived on G Avenue, that wasn't annexed into the city of Parchment either.
True.
Hardings
true.
And all that was outside
sure.
of the city.
Sure, that's right. That's right.
So that was the only time. And I don't know if you ever lived in Parchment proper.
No, it's always Cooper Township.
Always Cooper Township. Do you guys? Go ahead.
Actually, when I lived on Wilson, it was not the city of Parchment, it was the village of Parchment.
The village.
Right.
Sure. How about work here? Do you guys work here as...
I'm going to back the story up here just a little second. Talking about Belle Isle. And, the earliest one, you asked about the early recollections of Parchment. I can remember when Bob Belle Isle's drugstore, the business he operated, was actually comprised of two separate businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Hardings was located on the left side, and Bob was on the right. Bob
mm-hmm.
came here in 1944, the year that I was born. And he shared that building until, I'd guess, maybe about 1950 or so, something like that. And then Hardings, or maybe a little later than that, Hardings built a store where they're at right now and relocated. So he assumed that whole building. But they were two very long, narrow, especially Hardings. It wasn't much wider than a bowling alley.
That's great.
Yeah.
And went back there.
Yeah.
And Dutch Sperling was the guy that ran it in both places. And
is that in the Mother's Reef building now?
Yep.
But Mother's Reef is bigger than Harding's
was. Well, that building, like Rick just stated, was right down the middle, two
long
buildings.
Long and narrow,
two
okay.
buildings. But I was on the right-hand side as you face it, and Harding's on the left-hand
okay.
side.
Okay.
And that was actually, Mel Harding came here, I believe, from Tennessee or somewhere, and that was actually the very first Harding
Wasn't
building.
It?
of all the chains.
Yeah,
know, later,
here.
And
oh.
He got out of it. He had partners, and Spartan Food bought into it and whatever. He was out mm-hmm. of it quite a while, but
yeah.
that was where the Harding's chain started, right there in Parchment.
Oh, I see.
And if you go down okay. to the Harding's store here in Parchment, sure. they have a picture on the wall of that.
Okay.
That old building.
Oh, I've seen that. I have seen that. Sure.
And the other thing, sure. early time that I remember was Dr. Pryor had an office over the barbershop, which was run by Frank, and I don't remember Frank's last name.
I don't remember Frank's last name either, but Frank was the only minority in town
yeah,
when we were kids.
He was a black barber.
He was Uncle Jake's personal barber.
Yes.
And he had a barbershop below where Jeannie's Coiffures is now.
Okay. Yeah.
And he was the only minority in town.
I see.
But he was Uncle Frank's barber from somewhere. Or Uncle Jake's barber from somewhere, yeah. And then he later, actually Carl started working with him.
Yeah, he was in there for a while too.
Yeah, Carl's barbershop
came
in Parchment.
Yeah, Carl came after that.
Okay. But this Dr. Pryor you mentioned?
Dr. Pryor.
Family
Robert Pryor.
Physician?
Yes.
Family doctor?
Well, he wasn't a real doctor though, Rick.
Oh.
He was what, a DSO or DOS or what are they, you know?
An osteopath, you mean? A DO?
Yeah,
DO.
DO.
Doctor
yeah.
of osteopathy?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And,
he used to give shots.
I know. You get shots, and he used to do the bone crushing, and
yeah.
he used to diagnose everyone with the same thing, pityriasis rosa.
Yeah. He built a home and a combination home and office, which stands today. I don't know who lives there anymore, but
where is
right
that?
Across from the City Hall.
Riverview.
That big house that sets back up
yeah.
on the hill.
Yeah.
So he had a little office there right downtown Park.
How do you spell his last name, Rick?
Pryor.
He has
a
okay.
daughter named Patty Pryor.
He has two daughters, Patty and... Mary Jane,
uh-huh.
they're both still around the area.
I see.
Yeah, they've been to several reunions.
Another story, in Dr. Pryor's office up there, it was him and his wife that was the nurse, and I can't think of her name, but she was a spark plug. But he had a big old pickle jar, and people put money in at donations. He was going to start a hospital here.
Yeah, there was supposed to have been an osteopathic hospital
yeah,
building.
Where he built his home, the property back up in there, and
yeah.
boarding with Espanola was the land
yeah.
that he had for the hospital. And the only thing that ever happened, there was a sign built there, but he was questioned about it later, or maybe even after he died, and the money had run out, you know,
yeah, where'd the
maintaining
money go?
The property.
And
there's an article. There's an article in the Gazette if you want to research it about the hospital. I don't think it was anything illegally done. It just
mm-hmm.
never materialized.
Mm-hmm.
But that was his plan, his dream to have a hospital there.
Ah.
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay.
And
okay.
He also was our physician for the school and did all the physicals and stuff at that time,
shots
too.
Shots at the
yeah.
school and all that vaccinations.
Yeah,
yeah.
they used to do.
Yeah.
I remember getting
well,
vaccinated.
Yeah,
in
but
the,
I don't think
oh,
he
yeah.
did
elementary
so much
school.
Of that. That was the health department. But
yeah.
in athletics, you had to have a physical before you could participate. And he
sure.
would do that, and then he would show up at the games. They had a physical. Right now it's Dr. Kohlmeier, Stephen Kohlmeier.
Either of you guys play sports?
Yeah, I did.
Bird did.
You did?
Yeah.
High school sports?
Yep.
Okay.
Football,
what kind?
Football, baseball.
Football and baseball.
Yeah, that's about all they offered. We had basketball and track.
Okay.
Football, baseball. We had four sports at that time. And, of course, the girls didn't have any sports. They had a Girls Athletic Association, what was an intramural thing.
Right.
And we were terrible. We were starting out school. We started.
Yes.
Well, our first football team I played on in Parchment was in junior high school, and this is an interesting story. You know, no equipment, no uniforms. We had jeans and a maroon sweatshirt and pieces of canvas with a little maroon tip on it, and you tie a knot in it, stick it in your belt on either side, and you run your play. It was called flag football.
Okay.
When you run your
sure.
play, the opposing team would pull the tail out of your pants and hold it up, and then the ref would blow his whistle.
I see.
And our best football player, who will remain nameless, the style was to wear
on.
Your jeans a little lower.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
It was a play where he broke loose for a touchdown, was running down the field, and the tail fell out. That's where the play ended, and we didn't get the score.
Oh, no.
So I can remember Fred Roos was our coach. I can remember him telling, hike those pants up.
Yeah.
Fred Roos related to Ken Roos?
Ken Roos.
Ken Roos,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You're right.
Ken,
see,
okay.
that's why Rick's here, the correct Ken Roos, who was the principal and he was the football coach. But anyway, after that, in 10th grade, we started a regular football program with the equipment and everything. And Jim Nickum and Ray Phillips were the coach. And we were just a 10th grade team trying to schedule games against high school teams,
yeah,
you know, that had juniors and seniors.
Sure.
So we played a lot of junior high teams or JV teams.
Mm-hmm.
We had to travel all the distance to get games. We had to go all the way to Marin, I remember, and you know, mm-hmm, we just places that, you know,
right,
quite the distance out just to get a schedule.
Sure.
And it was years before we won a game, actually.
Was it?
It was. Yeah. It was years before we
oh
won
boy.
A game.
Oh, oh.
And actually, the football field at the high school now was built when I was a senior, but it wasn't ready to play. So I never played on the field up there.
I see.
And we never had a field.
Uh-huh.
So all our home games were away.
Oh! Oh!
So
oh,
it was kind of difficult, okay, that first couple of years to establish any kind of high school tradition with homecoming,
yeah,
and
yeah,
stuff like that, because
yeah,
we didn't have any home field,
sure,
or anything. But
sure.
Shortly after that, the things started getting better, and there was some history then. And
yeah,
they got nice facilities now.
Yeah, very. How about work as a teenager? You guys work as a teenager in town doing anything?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, Bert, you certainly did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did too. Go ahead and tell your story.
Well, my dad's gas station. I started working when I was
sure,
like 9 or 10.
Okay.
And, you know,
okay,
pumping gas and whatever, which you couldn't get away with today either. But
that's right. Those were the days when people wanted their windshields washed and their
fluids
looked at
full service
and pumped
check
their
the
gas.
Oil, check the air in the tires.
That's right.
Check the water in the accumulator.
Yeah.
We had one guy that, you know, I was a young guy, and he thought he was very smart and intelligent. And he'd come in and check the tire pressure, check the lubricant, and check the water in the accumulator.
Which is what?
Battery.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. That's a man. The battery.
Yeah.
Oh, how about you, Rick? Did you work as a teenager anywhere in town?
Yeah. The first job that I ever had was delivering TV guides.
Oh,
I remember,
yeah,
they were,
yeah,
15 cents a piece.
Yeah.
And I went from one end of parchment to the other every week, and I got to keep a penny for each of the magazines, TV guides.
Did you actually sell them, or these people were on subscription anyway?
They were subscribers.
I see.
I'd receive them.
I see.
I guess in the mail they must have come, and I'd distribute it.
How many would you get?
I'm going to guess maybe around 25 or so.
All right.
So I did that, and then I got a paper route, which I had for about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
It was located from Riverview Drive up to the high school.
Delivering?
Kalamazoo Gazette.
The Kalamazoo Gazette.
Yep.
Not the Parchment?
No.
Did that Parchment have a paper then?
Parchment had a Parchment Journal.
Parchment Journal was on my paper route.
Yeah.
A guy by the name of Mr. Dorothy was the one that published it. It was located, mm-hmm, his house was located, and the printing press was in the basement of that house.
Oh.
Was located at the corner of Thomas and Riverview.
That house still there.
I see.
And he did subscribe to the Kalamazoo,
yeah,
Gazette, but he was the publisher of the Parchment Journal.
I see.
And lived there in that home, and like I say, he had a printing press in the basement. I remember seeing it.
How did they distribute the journal, Rick? Do you know? Did they sell that one just at state newsstands?
You could get a subscription, but I think they put a stack in the store.
Yeah,
in
the
small
town paper where,
sure,
you know, Iris and Pete's daughter is visiting
is in
from
town.
Escanaba.
Exactly.
And,
right.
Yeah.
And
all
you know, all they get advertisement from local,
sure,
businesses and stuff.
Sure.
Not much of a paper, but
right,
still.
Just local social news.
I'm guaranteeing
kinda.
You got copies of it here somewhere.
I'm sure. I think we do. I think,
yeah,
we do have some. But what? Okay. Then you did the Gazette.
So I had the paper,
yeah,
out. Yeah. My district manager happened to live in Dito's apartments from the Gazette.
Well, she may not know which one.
Where's
Dito's
that?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, where's that?
There's four, 50, on my paper, I was like 503, 509, 507, 509, Riverview Drive.
Okay.
503, 505, 507. There's six units in each of the
corner of Thomas and Riverview.
Yeah.
North Riverview.
Right.
Well, south of G Avenue.
Yeah, because this is called South.
Yeah,
we're at 401 South here,
yeah,
at the library.
North,
so North Riverview. I,
yeah,
see. Okay.
So Jake Dito's, who's another friend of ours.
How do you spell that last name?
D-E-D-O-E-S.
Thank you.
Dito's. He currently lives in Plainwell and operates a business up there.
Oh.
Building. He's a cabinetry maker.
Okay.
So I always see him when I'm down here.
Yeah.
So nonetheless, his father built these apartments, and I think the first one was built about 1953 or 54, and then they built sequentially several mm-hmm. more after that, so all four of them were there.
Okay.
And anyway, that's where my district manager from the Gazette lived when I first got the paper out.
Can you picture those buildings?
I can, actually.
They all look alike.
They do. I know where those are.
Sandy-colored brick buildings?
Yeah, yeah, yep, yep.
Yeah, there's a story about that that Jake told me. I never
Jake who?
Jake Didos,
okay.
Whose father was the one that built them again. He had three or four older brothers. He was the youngest of the bunch. But he was saying that in talking about those constructions, though, the very first one they built, it was kind of a learning experience laying brick. And he and his brothers and his dad, I guess, subcontracted part of it probably. But anyway, he said if you follow the bricks around there, they aren't laid in layer after layer. They're actually built like a helix, and they go round and round and round. The bricks do this.
They do.
And rather than have them layered, kind of a trivial bit
for
of information that means
sakes.
Nothing.
But,
but that one building has...
Yeah.
has
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he told me that long ago, so... Kind of an interesting footnote. So the Didos have no longer have any association with those apartments. Somebody bought them long ago. I don't know who owns them. But,
no, I don't either.
Okay.
But they still are, up and running.
Yep.
And
still run. Yes, they've been there since the early 50s.
Right.
And I delivered
right.
papers there for five years or so to people.
After that, did you work somewhere after that?
Yeah, I had. I delivered to Gordon Simpson. Who had operated a shell station there. The shell station was built about 1961, I think. And he had come from Kalamazoo. He lived in Kalamazoo, but he became the proprietor of what was known as Simpson Shell Service.
Mm-hmm.
So I first met him. He's on my paper route. That gas station, again, is right corner of G Avenue and Riverview, right across from Bert's dad's Herald Service, which Bert's station was known as. But I stopped there one day and asked him if he'd like to get a paper, and he said yes. So I got to know him initially in that first year of operation. And then, I don't know what, he either asked me if I wanted to come work for him, or I asked him one day when I got out of high school. So I started working just after I graduated from high school. I worked for him for probably 3 years or 3.5 years when I was going to Western. And he was quite a influence on my life.
Oh, yes?
Yeah.
You miss them?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. These people are important. Can we continue? May I ask you about holidays in Parchment? Like 4th of July, was that a big deal here? Was Halloween a big deal?
Halloween, you did a few prank things. Innocent stuff compared to today, but at that time, there was, time for the FBI to come in. we were talking about that the other day. I remember I was a young kid, so I wasn't involved in this, but somebody put an outhouse right in the middle of the intersection of Parch Mountain and Riverview Drive, and of course, the city removed it and put it at the city works, I think it was, or somewhere. They had it stored somewhere. Well, the poor old guy that lived out North Riverview, he had to come and claim it because he had to use it.
Oh, no.
And then there was stuff like that. Tipping over park benches in the park was a favorite thing. And I didn't do any of that stuff, of course.
Of course not.
The other thing early about Parchment I remember, I think this is worth mentioning, is that we had... at the community house in Parchment, which the bank had replaced about 1965 or so. But I remember going down, and Bert may remember, that we had several programs, and we were like in elementary school where there was an auditorium in there and there was a stage. And I remember there were some plays put on by perhaps your class. I remember Jerry DeNoyer, who's deceased now, was in...
He was in my class,
He was in one of the plays that was up on that stage. But we walked down from the elementary school on Riverview Drive and participated in that. The community house was built in 1922 and had always been kind of a local Parchment landmark. And I was in the Scouts. That was the other thing that I was active in. A lot of kids in Parchment were in the Scouts. But all the Scout meetings were always held in the basement of the community house. So I was there every week. for what was known as Troop 18 scouting gatherings there, and then we did camping and stuff like that. But the weekly meetings were always held in the basement of the community house. And upstairs there was, I remember, in addition to the auditorium or meeting room, there was a gymnasium that was round back, and there were cafeteria facilities there, kitchen facilities that all had existed from when the KVP operated as a cafeteria for their employees at one time. So that building stood there for a long time and was a real landmark, and there was a playground out there adjacent to it.
Yeah.
You know, you talk about the stage at the community house. That was the only stage in Parchment.
That was it. Well, there was one built at the junior high building
later. But when we were down there from elementary school, we were going down there. Man, it seemed like we were going down there every day for something. Maybe it was because we were doing a Christmas program or something, you know, and we'd walk behind your teacher, first, second, or third grade teacher down there, and rain, snow, or shine, and do whatever we had to do down there.
Yeah.
And
They would hold dances down there. That's about the only thing I can
remember. Well, the community house says it all. That's what it was. It was for the community.
Sure.
I can, you know, you talk about holidays. Mm-hmm. My dad worked at KVP a long, long time ago during the Depression. Not so much in the mill, but he worked for Jake, Uncle Jake, and during the Depression to help build the park and stuff like that.
Yeah,
because Uncle Jake put everybody to work.
Yes.
Anybody wanted a job, he put them to work.
Yep.
And the mill, the people, the employees of the mill, they would have a Christmas party in the basement, and Santa Claus would be there.
Mm-hmm.
And people could bring their children to see Santa Claus. Well, my uncle worked at the mill, so when my cousin went, we went.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to see Santa Claus, even though we weren't part of the mill thing.
Sure.
And the gymnasium Rick's talking about in the back, the caretaker of the community house, his name was Mr. Rem, right?
Yes, Mr. Rem.
And he lived upstairs. And we would sneak into the gym to play basketball. We'd play for an hour and a half or something like that, and then he'd come down and kick us out. He knew we were down there an hour before that.
But he'd let you.
He let us play for a while.
Let you play.
Yeah.
R-E-H-M?
I think so.
Is that how you spelled his last name? Maybe just R-E-M, but I sure don't know.
It was Rem. It was pronounced Rem.
Okay.
Mr. Rem. He lived over on Glengyle.
Was it Vic?
Don't remember the first name.
Okay.
But he was a caretaker. He lived upstairs. He had to know we were in there.
Sure.
You know, but he'd let us play for a while, and then he'd come out and say, "You boys shouldn't be in here. Get out of here."
Now, let's talk about, either of you worked for KVP?
I never did.
I never did either.
You didn't?
I had been been in the area where my dad worked. He ran a waxing machine. So he brought me over there a couple times, and they would probably have kind of lax security by today's standards, but he could bring people into the mill.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
I always regretted it. I never got to see the paper machines. I've seen paper mills all over the world, but I never got into the actual paper machine operation here, and it's all defunct now, of course.
Sure.
It's all been scrapped, and it's nothing but a hollow shell anymore, really.
Yeah.
But, so they had what was called number one mill and number two mill.
Mm-hmm.
Number two was a more modern one that was built sometime, I'm going to guess, in the late 30s, mid to late 30s.
Yeah.
But my dad worked in what's called a converting area, where they actually took the paper after it was manufactured and it was printed and it was over waxed, and that's what operation he did. And from there it was packaged and distributed to their customers or resellers or wholesalers or whatever.
Okay.
So that was in the new part of the mill, but not in the actual paper manufacturing area, it's converting area.
Can I ask you guys about Christmas paper, Christmas wrap? KVP made.
They made it, yeah.
Christmas wrap, and
Every family in Parchment had a few rolls.
That's the stories.
Sure.
If your uncle worked here, your aunt
worked
there, or whatever.
Christmas
wrap.
Yeah.
And
Christmas
a lot
wrap
of it.
And some kind of napkins my uncle used to get, too.
Oh, yes?
Yeah, some kind of it was like a Kleenex box, but maybe it was wax paper, too.
Yeah,
was
delicatessen paper.
Yeah, that stuff was made available, my understanding, to the employees either at a discounted price or
giveaway.
Well, they might have gotten
discount
this,
or something.
They got seconds, too.
Yeah,
you know,
seconds.
Yeah.
Quite didn't make the standard, I think people went home with?
Sure. Yep.
The seconds.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was always available. Even if you didn't work there, you knew somebody did.
Knew somebody that had it.
You could get it.
Yeah.
The grades of paper that mill made, it was a variety of things. They made some what called bond and ledger papers, and to a small extent, and those are all recyclable. But a lot of the papers that they manufactured, particularly the wax papers or the Quillon coated papers, which are used for food packaging, but the wax papers, none of that stuff is repulpable. The only thing you can do with it when you're done is, if it's not sold, the only way you can dispose of it is either bury it or burn it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no repulping of it. So, it was very easy to, if there were seconds of any of those coated papers, wax papers, something like that, to let the employees have it free, because it's just going to be destroyed anyway.
Right. So.
They used to supply a lot of paper to the schools, too.
Yeah, that's right. The bonds
and
the
ledgers. I don't know if it's scrap paper that they did, the art classes, or if it was notebook paper or what, but KVP was a big supplier to school supplies.
Yeah.
For Parchment schools.
School book paper, notebook papers, the line papers. That
Art papers and stuff.
Yeah.
So they made a variety of papers there. But
Well, I don't know if this is true or not, but if they didn't make it there, they had a source to get it from another plant, too. Like, if they didn't make the notebook paper there, if the school needed it, they got it.
They got it.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
So, I see.
Yeah. A lot of those papers were made by other manufacturers, the notebook papers and stuff like that in Kalamazoo.
Yeah.
Because Kalamazoo had been quite a center of paper industry.
You're talking right into Rick's wheelhouse here. He's a paper technology graduate from Western.
From Western. Sure. That's right. You said that. Yeah. This Kalamazoo was a huge mill town.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, one time it was called Paper City and the Celery City. It had those two titles.
That's right. Yes.
But very little of it left anymore.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of it left, but it's in ruins.
We're in ruins. That's quite abandoned, demolished.
What, if we can get a little philosophical here, we always ask people this towards the end of the oral history interview, what you would like people to remember most about Parchment?
Oh, I'd say probably the close-knitness of the community as much
as anything. Even though we were in close proximity to Kalamazoo at that time, we still felt like we were a separate community. Since then, Kalamazoo Township, Cooper, everything has all grown up around it, and you don't have the same feel. It's just continual buildings from one place to another. But when we were kids, when you left the viaduct down there on Riverview Drive, actually when you left Gull Road, and came this way, there was a separation.
Right. Separation from Kalamazoo.
From Kalamazoo to Parchment. Well, now there's businesses and
there's,
stuff like that. You don't get that same feel. In the same way off to the, what it would be, the east of Parchment, a lot of those homes and the Cooper Heights and stuff,
didn't exist.
No.
It was all farmland.
Where the Christian Reformed Church is, I think it's Christian Reformed on G Avenue, as you just go up the hill on G Avenue on the left-hand side, there was nothing there except that was where we went sliding down that hill.
Ah.
That was called Hamburger Hill or Hogenboom Hill, depending on who you were. The Hogenboom family lived kind of like you'd go into their backyard. So they kind of ruled it, and they had a big family.
Yes.
It wasn't a hill for little kids so much because it was pretty steep.
Pretty steep.
And the Hogenbooms and some of the Holtmans that lived down there, they built a jump out of wood.
Oh,
and so they go down there, and then they get airborne.
You bet.
Further on down Riverview Drive, behind Riddick's house, was a more gentle hill, and that was Riddick's Hill. So
I see.
That was a little gentler.
Yeah,
but
was this a great place to grow up?
Either
of you?
Yeah.
I mean, in retrospect,
The
older we get, we see a lot of other stuff, and we think where we grow up. Place or not?
I tell a story that people can't believe, but when I was a kid, I don't know, 8, 9 years old, I'd leave my folks' house with my baseball bat, my glove, and my ball, and a bucket of some kind, maybe a coffee can with a wire handle I made or something, and I'd go up to the park, and we'd play baseball with whoever's there. Till we got tired of doing that, and then we'd get water in those buckets, and we'd drown out the gophers. Try to drown out the gophers. somebody pour water down the gopher hole, somebody else would be at the other end trying to, you know, catch the gopher.
Trying to catch the gopher.
Or actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. but my folks would just say, you know, come back for lunch, and the noon whistle would blow from the mill.
Okay.
Yeah,
we didn't have a watch. I didn't have a watch. Do you have a watch?
No.
There was no town clock. Some of the stores.
For the whistles.
Yeah, some of the stores had a clock. But you didn't know what time it was except for the whistles.
Yeah.
Every shift change, there was a whistle. Now, I don't think there was one at late at night, 11.
Probably not.
No, but at 8 or whenever they start, 7?
8 bells.
7, 12, and 3:30, I think it
certainly
was.
Certainly at noon. I remember the noon whistle.
Yeah, because that was our lunch break, too. We had to walk home and eat lunch and get back.
Of course.
Yeah. And we go home. I think we may have had 40, 45 minutes. But a half hour just doesn't seem right.
No.
But I lived like 4 blocks, so I'd run home in about 3 minutes, gobble down my lunch, run back, and then you'd have a half hour to play on the playground.
That's right.
And mom was home, so lunch was always ready, right?
True.
Same time.
That's true.
The whistle was what, you know, if they blew that whistle and you weren't in school, you were in trouble.
I guess so.
In the afternoon, we'd go back to the park sometimes, and then it was the old proverbial come home when the streetlights come on, basically.
Yes.
And
be home before the streetlights are on.
Before the streetlights are on. And
yes.
If you weren't, Dad was in the car. He knew right where we were at the park. And we'd be at the park on Scout Hill or somewhere, and you could see him coming. So we'd cut out through the other way on our bikes. So he'd be searching in the park and see the other kids and ask where we were. And, oh, he left. You know.
Yeah.
But it was just, they never thought about us being safe.
Right.
Or anything happening
That's
to
true.
Us. Not a thing, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
You could go anywhere and be gone all day long. And
right.
Today you couldn't do that.
You too, Rick? Good place to grow up? And
oh, yeah. It's I can't imagine a better place, really.
Really?
I've lived in a variety of places and been in small towns, but Parchment was really good.
Yeah, yeah. So. You know what I didn't ask you guys? We're going to wrap up here in a couple minutes. The names of your brothers and sisters. Bert, you go first.
Okay, I have a sister named Linda, her married name is Linda Warner.
Mm-hmm.
I have a brother named Harold, but most people know him as Harry or Chico or Skip.
Okay.
And that's it.
And your wife's name?
My wife's name is Dorothy. I have a son named Ian, who graduated from Parchment High School.
How old is he now?
He's 31.
All right.
He lives in California. He's teaching and coaching out there.
All right.
That's our only child.
Okay. Rick, you, brothers and sisters?
Only child. No brothers and sisters.
Only child.
Yeah.
And your wife's name?
Judy.
Judy.
She's originally from St. Joe, Michigan.
I see.
And met her up at college. And,
all right.
Basically. And.
Have you any children?
No children.
No children.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Let me just ask one more thing. What's your definition of a successful life? What do you consider a success in your life?
Healthy, happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, good citizen, you know, not in any trouble.
Yes.
Right. Not too materialistic about anything. That's, you know, that comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
Just being healthy and happy, I guess.
Yeah.
Not causing any trouble.
Yes.
I would probably rate somebody's measure is defined by their friends.
Okay.
So, particularly long, lived friendships that you have over the years.
Yes.
So,
sure.
The more friends you have, the more successful you are.
Okay. Okay.
You were talking earlier about the stores in Parchment.
Yeah.
And Rick and I just went over this down at Scooter D's the other day.
You did?
Yeah. And where the upholstery store is now used to be Vans.
Vans
5 and 10.
Vans 5 and 10.
And he
yep.
had counters of penny candy.
Oh boy.
You know, I mean, just out there in these glass bins. Like.
Yeah, you look in the glass window.
He also had silver dollars all over the place. He collected them. They were either in the counter or his silver dollars. So that was a big deal. But anyway, when you got out of school, before school, you used to, all group up before the doors, and then the doors
were
unlocked. Well, if you had any money, you went and run down to Vans if it was open, you got a pocket full of candy, and you went back to school. At noontime, you could leave what they call leave campus.
You
couldn't.
You could.
Yeah, you could. So you go down to Vans or you go over to Belisle's and get penny candy.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting story. And they also had another, it was a 5 and 10, so it had these little rubber snakes and hand buzzers, remember all that stuff?
Sure.
And dinosaurs and stuff, you know. So you could, if you had 10 cents, you could make a purchase.
Mm-hmm.
And then the most interesting thing for me was the store next door where the pizza is now.
Yeah.
That was Roan and Blair Electric.
Roan and Blair Electric, right.
Oh, and how do you spell that first?
R-O-W-E-N and Blair, B-L-A-I-R,
all right.
And they were in there for a long time. They were appliances and TVs and in the front window. They always had the modern TV, you know, the most current TV or whatnot. So during the World Series, when we get out of school, we'd all go line up in front of that window and watch the World Series. And actually, when color TV came out, the parents were lined up in front of that window watching TV also.
It's a big deal. Yeah. It was a very big deal.
Yeah.
Well, First National Bank used to be located, talking about the other place left there. That's about
where Parchment Manor is.
Sure.
And that was a busy place. And I remember that had that marble walk up to it. And people would go in there and cash their checks or whatever. They had money, and they'd always use rubber bands. There was little rubber bands all over that thing. I remember as a kid, they'd go in there and picking up those little rubber bands. And then on the other side, of course, was Belisle's, and then where the photography thing is was Frank Clark.
Frank Clark, drugstore.
Pharmacy.
Pharmacy, there. Okay.
It was there for years and years. And that was out of Gold Lake.
That was it. There was no Shopper's Lane.
No, that's right.
Well, the barbershop was between Belisle's and Clark. Mm-hmm. But there was no Shopper's Lane. Mm-hmm. There was no Harding's. Where Harding's is now, when I was a kid, that was a field. We used to have forts in there.
It used to be a gravel pit there.
How about that American, what's the name of that lithographic company right there? Was that, is that,
that
a recent
Kaiser
building?
Frazier. That was a Kaiser Frazier
dealer. Kaiser Frazier auto dealer.
It was.
Yep. And then right in front of that was a real little old gas station, Standard Oil station, at Joe Gatwood. Emo Foster owned it first.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, Judy and Jane Foster's dad.
No, I didn't know that.
And it was your prototypical little gas station with just one little building and pillars and the pumps and maybe an outside pit. I don't know. They didn't have any bays, did they?
They had one bay.
Maybe they had one bay.
Okay.
But that stood in front of that, but the building behind was the Kaiser Frazier dealership, which was a...
Henry J. Kaiser from World War II,
Liberty Ship fame. The car wasn't produced very long.
He's manufacturing cars.
Willys.
Forced them out of business in the early 50s.
Yeah. And I think it was something before that, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
It was some kind of dealership, because my dad had worked there at one time, too.
Sure.
And
And Stan Hydonis was across the street. He's a... operating gas station. Yeah.
How do you spell his last name?
Hydanus.
Yeah. Anybody know?
Hydanius, I think. Something like that.
He was a character.
Some of the names you have mentioned, I have not heard. So this is just good for us for more research.
Don Lent ran the mobile gas station.
No, Don Lent ran the Marathon gas station, but before that it was a Sinclair gas station. It was run by... Ralph Winham. My father worked at that one, too.
Okay.
Winhams were in school with me. There was one on here that I
Is there one on here? Because...
No, I guess not. Oh, the hairstyles and clothes and stuff like that? Mm-hmm. You know where the Butler's Lawyer thing is?
No.
Sure you do.
Yeah,
Butler's
Lawyer. That's the
Oak
business.
Grove and David Butler, the lawyer.
Sure.
Law office there.
Sure, the law offices.
That was Weikstra's dry goods store.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what was that? The Red Goose Shoes.
Red Goose Shoes.
They had a big red
had a sign
goose
out there
sign
for
out
years.
There. But anyway, just before he went back to school, that's where you folks took you to buy your school clothes. Really
it was like a department store.
Full line of a lot of shoes.
It was a department store.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then after the Weikstra family got out of it, Dave Butler's father bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Butler, and ran it as Parchment Department Store. And then when he closed it, Dave put his offices in there.
Okay.
But that was a hot spot.
Hot spot.
Business.
Sure.
Yeah. Weikstra's.
My mother always made a comment about it.
I think it was Weikstra's.
It was Weikstra's. Yeah. It was convenient, and they always had really good quality stuff there.
They
always liked going there.
They had good stuff.
Shop, even though it was a small store.
Sure. Yep.
Okay, we should go on forever.
I know.
Yeah.
And this actually won't
That's fine.
No, it won't go on forever.
Okay.
So I thank you both very much. I hope you had as much fun as I did.
Yes.
This is, we have stories now that we have never gotten from anybody else. So your comment, Rick, yesterday about you didn't think you had anything to say or anything to add, I would have to differ with you. This has
well,
been...
what I had to say plus $5 will get you a cup of Starbucks any place.
And my disclaimer is whatever I said could be true or could not be. I don't even know if my garage door is closed.
Thank you both very much.
You're welcome.